Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hi, fans. Welcome to the show. I'm here with an amazing guest, Carrie Tollefson. She was born and raised in Dawson, Minnesota, where she was a 13-time state champion, 8 in track and field, and 5 in cross country. Her 5 cross country titles established a national record for most consecutive titles, which still stands to this day. Carrie attended Villanova University, where she was a 5-time NCAA champion and the 1998 NCAA Indoor Track Athlete of the Year. She was also the first person in NCAA history to win both the 3K and the 5K titles. In her post-collegiate career, Carrie was a 3-time national champion, and after winning the 1500-meter trials in 2004, she represented the U.S. in the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens, Greece. Carrie has also worked on camera with ESPN, NBC, NBCSN, ABC, and USATF-TV. She does regular media coverage for various sporting events, including the New York Roadrunners and the TSC New York City Marathon. She's done commentary for several world-class events, including Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon and the Boston Marathon, Tokyo Marathon, and Foot Locker Nationals. She's also the spokesperson and on-camera talent for the Minnesota Grown. Currently, Carrie lives and trains in her home state of Minnesota with her husband and her 3 children. She inspires and motivates people to get after it in life through her public speaking and training camps. So, wow, what an intro. Carrie, welcome to the Female Athlete Nutrition Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Lindsay. This will be fun.
Absolutely. And kind of as a caveat, I was introduced to you by one of my assistants because I have a few people on my team. So another registered dietitian, Lizzie, who is also from Minnesota. And so that's kind of how we got connected. And I just feel really fortunate to be speaking with you. The 2004 Olympics, I actually interviewed another Olympian in the sport of gymnastics who was also in Athens. And that was a time in my life where I was a teenager. So that was like the Olympics that I was fangirl for, watching every event. So I was watching you 100%. That was the year for me that I was like all in for the Olympics.
Yeah, it was so cool. I mean, going back to where it all began in Athens, Greece was something pretty spectacular, but it was also my first time running and only time running the Olympic Games. So I was really excited to be there. My family came, and what an honor it was to have the USA across my chest and to actually, you know, work so hard for something and to see it come to fruition was really cool.
Yeah. And just to kind of get right into things, because I'm not sure where I heard this from, but just kind of knowing a bit about you, you were really a 5K runner, but in the Olympics, you ran the 1500. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I probably would have been really good at the 3K steeple or just the 3K flat. That's kind of my hot spot. But the 5K that year had been probably my best event. I had run the Olympic trials standards and also the Olympic standards in the 5K. And we kind of were putting all the eggs in that basket. And then I ended up just having a tough day. I was sixth. I ran smart, but I didn't follow through in the last 1,000 meters and I missed making the team. And then I came back and won the 1500 and made the Olympic team that way. So, I mean, the 1500 was still a good event for me, but it wasn't necessarily my best event. I've only run 4:06 in the 1500, and that really is not a time that's competing very well at an international level. And I had run 15:04 in a tactical race, and I really thought the 5K I could have done a little bit more in. And, you know, that's the sport. It's sport in general, but sport and track and field, you have an off day, and, you know, especially in America, there's a bunch of women that are going to gobble you up, and they did.
Yeah, that's just so interesting because, yeah, I think that's the thing with sports is it's the competition at that time on that day, and you know, wherever you are on that day, you might have been a stronger 3K, 5K-er, but on that day, you know, other people showed up and you showed up in the 1500 though. Isn't that amazing that you went to the Olympics in something that wasn't even necessarily your strongest sport versus, let's face it, that year, I'm sure there were people who said their 1500 was their Olympic dream and, you know, didn't, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the whole like exciting thing about sport, right? Is it's kind of, you know, always it's fun to win. And that's, you know, obviously the objective. But I think when you can figure out how tough you are individually and as a team, when you come back from those failures, which I really don't like that word, those setbacks, you know, those tough days, those losses, I mean, that's really what gets us back out there. You know, when you win and you keep on winning and you kind of are, you know, just going through the motions, that's not really what gets you fired up. I mean, it's awesome to win, yes. But I think when you really look at good athletes, it's the ones that come back and kind of reinvent themselves every time they have a down day or a loss or whatever. It's those people that really figure out how to be better. And that's where the good athletes are too. I mean, yeah, I would love to say I could step on the track every single day and just obliterate everybody and then figure out how to be better every single time. But I think when somebody beats you, there's some lesson, there's lots of lessons that you learn about you, about your heart, about your soul, about your grit, all that stuff that gets you back out there to be better.
Absolutely. And I love how you said too, it's, you know, even the word failure isn't quite fitting for that. If it's almost those hard times and hardships that really, you know, create that strength and that grit within you to become somebody even better, then how could it possibly be a failure?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, failure is obviously a word we all know, but I think when you're trying your best at something or you're putting your all into it, it's not really a failure. It's maybe an off day, or maybe you weren't quite as good as the person next to you on that day, but it doesn't mean you can't get out there the next time and beat them or have a better performance. So, you know, use failure lightly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I want to touch back on your collegiate days, if you can kind of jump back in time with me. I'm also curious to know, was like becoming an Olympian the dream for you, or did it just happen, or was that the dream?
Well, I guess in high school, I didn't necessarily know I was going to be an Olympic athlete. I mean, I think we knew that I had something special out in rural Minnesota where I grew up, just because of, you know, the way that I would run, the amount of times that I won. I mean, I didn't lose a race from eighth grade till my very last race as a senior. So Wow. That's why I talk about how you really learn more about yourself when you get beat. You know, I had to figure out how to win races or how to set new time standards or, you know, how much to beat the person by behind me, because I was kind of in a position where I won a lot in high school and it was awesome. It was super fun. But, you know, I didn't know that I was going to be an Olympic athlete then. I knew that I was a good runner. I knew that I belonged with a really good team, and that's why I wanted to go to Villanova. I wanted to surround myself with people that were going to beat me, people that were going to make me figure out how to be a better version of myself, and people that were way better than me. And so when I went out east to Villanova, I had that, and I didn't win a race for a long time. I was third or fourth on my team. You know, I'd go to practice every day and get my butt handed to me. You know, I had NCAA champions. I had people on my team that were so much better than me, and it was such a good learning experience. And I think it was then when I started to win and I started to beat people, or at least be able to handle workouts with these athletes that had dreams of being an Olympic athlete. Or I had my coaches who were world-class athletes and Olympians tell me that they thought I could do what they do. That's when I really kind of thought, well, okay, the next step after winning an NCAA championship and after being the best in the US is to make that Olympic team. So it was probably then that it really started to become a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think it's so great to hear you speak of winning, and I don't even want to call it losing, you know, coming in second or third or whatever that, or fifth, whatever that looked like. Because yeah, winning is fun, but you learn so much. And that must have been a hard transition into college, but also what an exciting one that finally I'm training and I'm competing with people who are going to push me to be something better. It's scary to be around people that are quote unquote better than you, but that's exactly what pushes us in any area of our life, you know, running, sports, or otherwise.
Yeah, it was super scary. You know, it was different for me. It was good that I got beat my very last race as a senior in high school. I mean, I had other races.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened.
Yes, I ran the 800 against a woman that was actually just a superstar in like the 2, 4, and 8. And I ran the 1600 and the 2 mile. So we clashed in the middle and it was at the line. Like it was really fun for the crowd. Probably not so much fun for me because I had to walk away like, just got beat. But I got beat by a really good runner. So that, you know, made things a little bit better. But when I went out to Villanova, yeah, it was hard. Hard to every day go to practice and think, am I going to be able to keep up? Am I going to make this team? Am I going to be able to, you know, have the same excitement that I did in high school? And it seemed to be fine and it worked out great. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Amazing. So let's chat about nutrition a bit then. And you and I have chatted briefly before, you know, you're like, I'm not a nutritionist, but that's okay. We just want to know as an Olympian, as a athlete your whole life, you know, what your nutrition experiences have been. So I'm just curious if you can, again, go back in time and just think like, at what point in time was nutrition on your radar for any reason at all?
Well, I guess the first time I really started thinking about it was when I was in high school. I went out to the Olympic Training Center and we did have nutritionists or dietitians check out what we were doing, you know, just to see. Like they wanted us, I think before we even went out to the camp. So I was invited to this elite camp and they would have us do like a 3-day, you know, kind of tracking of our diet. And it was just kind of funny because we ate pretty well. My family loved to cook and, you know, we had fun with our meals. We looked forward to our meals. I mean, my mom and dad both liked to work out and then we loved to replenish a lot. So, you know, we had good relationships with our food in our family. You know, there were some ups and downs. I have 2 older sisters and they both kind of battled different things, you know, like trying to figure out how to eat healthier and eliminate some things so we could be better athletes. And I got the opportunity of following in their footsteps. So I watched how they, you know, change things or they added things in. And when I went out to the Olympic Training Center, really the only advice they had for me was to eat more, which I ate a lot. But as an athlete, I was burning a lot and I was a little athlete. You know, I was growing a lot and I was naturally on the slighter side. And I think they were just concerned that as a professional or, you know, not professional, but as an elite athlete, even at the high school level, you have to be concerned with what you're putting into your body. You have to know what you're putting into your body. And they were trying to teach me at a young age to pay attention. And, you know, I had a milkshake every night with my dad and they said, keep up with that. I actually had a soda every day for a long time in high school. There's a pop called, we call it pop, Sundrop out where I live. They bottle it out there. And they were like, keep your Sundrop. You know, that's fun for you. That's, you know, it's your treat. And, you know, they just really wanted me to, they encouraged me to eat a little more in the morning. There was nothing big that I was missing. It was that I needed more. And then in college, it was similar. It was, you know, just making sure that I had enough fuel throughout the day so I wouldn't be lacking any fuel going into workouts. But like I said, I think the big thing over the years for me was I was very concerned about making sure I didn't have an issue with eating or I didn't want to shy away from calories or didn't want to make sure to replenish after workouts. First and foremost, I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to have a life after sport. I also wanted to be a really good runner and I didn't want to be sitting on the sidelines because I was malnourished and injured. So I think the big thing for me hasn't always been how perfect is your diet, because my diet is not perfect, but more so making sure I'm getting enough and then having fun with what I eat. You know, we just had Chipotle last night and I was more concerned with having to stop at a porta potty during the middle of my run today than how much, you know, I put into my body.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big thing. And that's, you know, I have all these youth camps and I speak to a lot of people and, you know, I know that relationships, the different people have different relationships with food. For me, I'm thankful that I've always had a good one. And, you know, I've sought the help when I need it. And that's normally how can I put more in without feeling full at a workout or, you know, having an upset stomach, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. We can just end this podcast right now and everybody can just take what Carrie just said to heart. So many good things that I want to highlight, which is, you know, if you do want to be a great athlete as you were trying to do and as you eventually did become, it means being aware of what you're putting in your body, but not being too concerned with it or too restrictive, actually eating more and encouraging yourself to eat more. And that the dietitians at the Olympic Training Center, which they still have, the Team USA has dietitians that support them. And, you know, a lot of people have this view of dietitians, a food police, or they're just going to tell you to eat kale. It's like runners do not survive on kale.
No,
we do not. Like, so it's not about just always eating cleaner, quote unquote, or healthier, but it really is fueling enough as an athlete and having fun with it. I'm just so glad you said that. And this is every person, like, because I know some people listening might be saying, but I'm not an Olympian. I'm not an elite athlete. So can I really have soda? Well, there's a place for everything in your diet, in your daily eating habits. If you can have fun with it, if you can build a healthy relationship around it, and if it's making your body feel good. Like another thing you said is that I always want to eat more. And then it just comes down to, like, you know, how do I feel on my run? You know, like Chipotle is fine, but also like maybe I shouldn't have that the hour before I go for a run because I'm going to take too many bathroom breaks, right?
Yes.
So being aware of what we're putting in our body, not necessarily being super restrictive or limiting or like negative about it.
I think that's the big thing. I did not want to be negative. I remember my freshman year of college being on my own for the first time. You know, I gained some weight that first year, but I was running better than ever. And I, you know, if you look at pictures, you might think that I was carrying more than I had in high school, but my body was adjusting. I was adjusting to learning how to eat on my own. I didn't have my mom. I had all the access to the cafeteria I ever wanted. I was staying up later, trying to study, trying to socialize, doing all the things that anyone does in college. And, you know, eventually my body and I figured things out. And I think sometimes if we can just kind of ride the wave, whether it's in training, in racing, in eating, in academics, I had to ride a big old roller coaster in academics too, and just an emotional roller coaster. But, you know, I think for me, I really wanted to just be careful with food. And I had seen in the past or seen on different recruiting trips how, you know, hard it is to have a tough relationship with food. And I just never wanted that because it's such a big part of our life. And I feel for people and I'm thankful for people like you that can steer people back or help people that, you know, don't have a healthy relationship. But I do believe if you are going to be an athlete or if you are trying to seek whatever goal it is in life, having a good relationship with food is so important. And, you know, if you have a struggle, it doesn't mean you can't come back from it. You know, you got to just find the right people, the right team to get you back on track.
Yeah, absolutely. It is something that it's devastating on just somebody dealing with a difficult situation with food. And also, you know, for those athletic dreams, it's devastating. And so it doesn't, just like you said, it's finding the right help, asking for help, and overcoming it to get to the place, you know, where you were of, yeah, I was, you know, just had this good, happy relationship with food. I was able to stay fueled. I was able to perform and, you know, for the most part, probably stay injury free. I'm sure you had your little injuries as every athlete does, but nothing major. I also want to highlight that you said you gained weight in college.
Yes, I did. And like everybody else, or
like everybody
else. A lot of people.
Yeah, like, you know, it's such a hard transition for high school to college. And I think we've created this fear around college of like, oh no, freshman 15, it's a bad thing. But like, is it really such a bad thing? It's a transition phase. You have to ride the wave. You're figuring a lot out. You're also at an age where you're, quite frankly, bodies are still changing. Bodies are always changing. But like, focusing on performance, like you said, I was running the best I ever had, no matter, you know, even if that did look like a few pounds heavier or different, shape different, proportion different, whatever, just ride that wave. So I think I'm telling my clients all this all the time, but I think hearing it from you know, someone like you was helpful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think I knew that it was happening until I got home that Christmas and I saw pictures. I was like, oh, you know, I look a little different. But what got me fired up after I even said that was, I've never run so fast in my life. You know, and I think a lot of people just assume that the heavier you get, the more it's going to be to carry around the track or whatever. Well, that wasn't the case for me. I got stronger. I built new muscle. You know, my visualization and my mental training was so much different because I was at a different level and I was thinking more about how I could be better and all these things. So, you know, it was just, I had to get it all to come together. So I had all these different pieces that I was learning and it was all new and it worked out. You know, I ended up over the year probably getting back to close to where I was in high school, but I did nothing different. Like, I don't think I changed anything. It just leveled out to that natural weight where I'm supposed to be at. And to be honest, that was when I was, what, 18 years old? I'm 44 years old and I still weigh the same. Like, it's my natural weight. You know, yeah, I've had fluctuation here and there, but, you know, 9 times out of 10, if I'm weighed, I'm at the same weight. So finding that healthy weight, that weight where you perform well, you know, I'm not afraid of marking down. I'm not afraid of getting on the scale. And I know that isn't always the case for everyone, but I get on the scale. I get on the scale probably every time I get done with a run, to be honest. I just jump on the scale. And then if I see something where it's dropped a bit or if it's gone up, then I maybe think about adjusting something or I just make note of it. It doesn't necessarily mean, oh, I can't have my milkshake every night because I weigh 3 pounds more. It might just mean like, oh, maybe I'll add a couple miles this week for me because I've been slacking or I've taken, you know, a ton of time off. Maybe I need to get out there again. So I have been lucky though. I keep telling you these things and in the back of my mind, I have this voice saying, but you're lucky because you haven't struggled with food. And so I am well aware that this is not an easy thing for everybody. So don't beat yourself up if you don't have the same mentality as I do.
And we definitely, I'm sure a lot of listeners really appreciate you saying that, but it's great to hear what does it look like for somebody who is lucky, you know, who doesn't struggle, because that's the dream. And for those people who are struggling, that's where you want to get to, where you can step on the scale. And it's just, I say this to my clients, it's just like a data point, you know, and for you and where you're at in your life right now, which is, I want to be clear, very different than a high schooler or somebody like transitioning, all those things we were just talking about, transitioning from high school to college or from, you know, running at the high school level to now intensely, you know, in the NCAA level, like so much is changing, but where you are in life right now, you can step on a scale and be like, okay, that's, you know, I know what my usual body weight is. I know what my peak performance weight is. I know what, you know, I can think about what I've been doing this week and I can recognize what have been healthy behaviors and what have been not so healthy behaviors. And so it's just like a data point for you. And, you know, I call that having a fierce mindset, being able to step on the scale and not feel like you have to do anything, not feel insecure about it, not feel down on yourself. Just say, this is what it is. Cool. Now I feel confident moving forward with my running, with my eating, and I'm not feeling any guilt or shame about that. It just is what it is.
It is what it is. Yep. I have a training log and I'm kind of old school. I still like to write down my workouts and every now and then when I'm feeling good. So this is what I do. I kind of look at life as a, you know, a glass is half full rather than half empty. And even when it comes to my weight and my nutrition and things like that, when I'm running really well and I've been healthy and I know that my sleep is on and my mind is right and I'm feeling good, I then will sometimes mark down my weight. And even though, like I said, I kind of have this benchmark weight, I still will do it even now when I'm not, I mean, it doesn't matter anymore how fast I run or how slow I run. It really doesn't matter what I look like. It didn't really matter what I looked like back in the day either, but you know what I mean? Like when I was at the peak of my performance, I would make notes and that is a data point for me because I was okay seeing that. The one thing though, when we talk about scales, I didn't have a scale in college and I don't think it was a good thing or a bad thing. But I have used the scale pretty much my entire life as a data point. And so now that I'm thinking about it, maybe because I did do that, maybe I should have had one in college just because then I would have known. You know, I want to say I probably was about 6 pounds heavier than I was as a pro at my best in college. So over the years, my weight maybe had come down to that, the same exact weight every year. But I don't know. It just is, maybe I'm confusing you, but I had those fluctuations. And because I didn't weigh myself every day in college, I think that's why they were bigger. I don't know why. I didn't see the number as consistent, you know? I might have weighed 125 or whatever for 3 months in college and then dropped to 122 at peak. But then as a pro, I saw it every day or every other day, and I could kind of see, oh, I've put on a little bit. Was it because it wasn't as hot out? Did I eat more? Did I train more? Those kind of things. So I do think data points are so important. And I just wish the scale wasn't such a negative in a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. And you have to work to get there. You know, if it is a negative thing, you have to work to understand it as a data point. You know, as a runner, there's sometimes where, whether you're, you know, have a coach or you're on a team, like coach is telling you to run slower or at a pace that's more of a recovery run, right? And then there's other times where he's like, no, get after it. And it's like, those are data points, your time, your pacing, they have purpose. And you can kind of, this is how I see it with weight too, for an athlete, you know, data point, maybe in the off season, we're 5-8 pounds heavier.
Exactly.
And you don't necessarily even have to do anything with your diet. It's just suddenly, you know, peak through different training, through different ways that you're taking care of your body, you know, or little things too. Maybe you off season, enjoy, if you're over 21, you know, a couple beers on the weekend, but when you're in season, you don't. And then you're at your peak performance weight, and you can use that as a data point, but it's not something that we have to like control so much. It's more of just a knowledge of this is what's happening. And another reason I want to highlight too, where you can step on the scale now, it can be powerful for athletes from a standpoint of like heat and hydration and sweat rates. So even from a daily perspective, you can monitor hydration with your sweat rate, which is reflected through body water loss and body weight loss. You can tell if you might be, which is typically a good thing, but if you are retaining extra water, and that might provide you some data of things going on or some other ways. Oh, and I think too, with athletes, there are some athletes who do struggle with, quite frankly, maintaining weight, dropping too quickly, unknowingly, you know, accidentally under fueling, which you said, you know, in your past nutrition experiences, people were always telling you eat more. It's like if you weren't constantly being reminded to eat more, maybe you were suddenly dropping some weight and suddenly a few pounds down, and actually being able to recognize that would be helpful to you to stay on top of that and prevent that.
For sure. I mean, that's the big thing for me, is I did get to a point where I knew if I was dehydrated that, oh, I might dip, you know, a few pounds after a long run. And now even when I do these long, hard, long runs in the summertime and I see a number that I don't normally see, I'm like, oh, I need to make sure I hydrate. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too stuck on the scale for people because it wasn't a major part of my training, but it was a tool and I wasn't afraid of it. And I feel like for me, having a healthy relationship with food, it was helpful. But I didn't say, oh, if I weigh 128, I'm going to have a bad race. Or if I weigh 122, it wasn't like that. It just was like, it's so weird just to see over the years that I kind of have this number that has been very consistent. And, you know, it's just like, it's me. That's what I'm supposed to be. And you know what? The best part about going to the Olympics, I always tell everyone this, obviously racing and, you know, being able to call myself an Olympian. But one of my favorite things about it, Lindsay, was going into the cafeteria, but sitting there and looking at every shape and size and ethnicity and gender, like seeing people that were at the best of the best, right? But everyone looked different. There were tall, there were short, there were round, there were thin, there were, you know, and we were all there to see what we were made of. And, you know, that's what I think, when I think of nutrition, that's what I think about. It's not necessarily, you know, how we can play games with it. It's how it's a tool for us to be the best we can be. And the cafeteria was pretty cool, actually. I could have sat there all day.
I feel like that would probably not probably, that would definitely be my favorite place to be.
Well, and then watching what people eat, kind of, you know, like I remember one of the first group of people I saw was I saw Yao Ming, who's this like, you know, 7 foot huge basketball player. And then I saw the American gymnasts walk in, and you know, gymnasts are traditionally smaller stature people. And so there's this big, big guy and these little American gymnasts. And it was so cool. I mean, Yao Ming's dinner plate looked like a dessert plate, you know, he was so big, but everyone was getting their nutrition, and that was a huge step in us to all prepare and to kick butt in our events. And yeah, it was a neat experience.
Yeah. Nutrition is a tool in order for your body to be capable of all the things, you know, all the amazing things that it can do. That's very, very cool. So how about you now, Carrie? You know, you are a mom. You're still active. You still run and train, and you continued to do so professionally, correct me if I'm wrong, after the Olympics?
Yes, I did. I actually competed professionally until about 2012.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And is that around the time that you started having children and then kind of like just taking the direction?
Yep. So I had my first at 2010, and then I tried to come back, and you know, it just wasn't in me anymore. Like, not to say that I couldn't have come back and run really well, but my heart just wasn't in it. And then we had another one in 2013, and then another one in 2016. And there was a lot of things that happened, but that was my life then. After 2012 was, you know, family. And then I started building my career off the track and broadcast and speaking and all the fun things that I do now that have sort of come to a complete stop with the pandemic. But I know it's been sad not having all the races, but we're getting closer and, you know, things are looking up. So I'm having fun with my three kiddos. They're all still home with me. So it's been a long year.
Yeah, it definitely has. I'm not a parent myself, but I feel for all the parents, you know, who love their children, but it's, I'm sure, been very difficult.
Yes.
Without having school, you know, in place. So yeah, I'd be interested in your perspective as somebody who's now, you know, quote unquote, on the sidelines. I don't know why I keep saying quote unquote so much in this episode, but I just keep saying it. So for somebody who's on the sidelines, but commenting or commentating on sports, I just think that women's sports have come so far over, you know, in the 21st century. They've just come so, so far. And I don't know what my question is really, but I would just be interested to hear your perspective of how some women have really excelled in sports and just achieved these really amazing things. And what is that like for you as somebody kind of reporting on and commentating on these events where you get to watch women just kind of crush things like they never have before?
Yeah. And I don't know if, you know, any kind of sport, I mean, women are awesome and they're doing great things, but in my sport right now, it's unbelievable. Like, the pandemic has been terrible for all of us, but at the same time, it's sort of, I don't know what it's done, if it's a mind shift or if it's been, you know, time for the athletes to really hone in on their skill. But we have had so many really, like, really good performances since everything has shut down. So very interesting. But I think women are just ready to showcase their talent. And they've had women that have led the way. And now it's their turn. You know, I see in our sport, you know, the times are getting faster. Yes, technology is getting better. But I think they're just excited to show that they're taking it serious, and they should be taken seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to get your opinion on also women in sport and in track and field. I see things randomly or hear things randomly where, you know, people commentating or announcers are making comments about female bodies. And, you know, a sport of track and field is very often like, you know, the sports bra and, you know, the spandex and just, quite frankly, minimal clothing. And you just hear comments. Some of them are obvious and some of them are subtle about, you know, somebody looking leaner, looking more fit. How do you think this impacts the athletes, or how do you think this impacts the culture of track and field? And do you think it's making a change?
Yeah, I never have understood that, to be honest. I mean, you go to, again, like the Olympics, and obviously I was just talking about Yao Ming being a tall guy and the gymnast being small, but My point was, it was so fun to see that anyone can be anything, any size. So I don't understand why commentators have to do that. You know, I think that it naturally comes out when you see somebody that is muscular and, you know, maybe more so on the men's side, when you see a guy that's super tall and they're competing against these smaller athletes and they think, how can they carry all that weight and run against these smaller guys? Well, immediately my mind goes, when I'm next to somebody that does that, my mind goes back to the different ways that an athlete is. Like, just because they're taller and muscular doesn't mean that they can't power their way to run against somebody that's smaller, lighter, and, you know, maybe less muscular. And then I think of that, well, why can't that person be stronger cardiovascular wise? Or yeah, maybe they are a little lighter so they can push. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't know enough of the exercise or the science behind it, but I just have never understood why that needs to be commentated on. Although when you watch, for instance, football, or you watch some of the other sports, in a male sport, it's a little different for commentators. And I don't want to get in trouble saying this either, but male commentators in a male sport don't get reprimanded nearly as often as a male would if they commentated on a female. So it's a, you know, as an athlete, I don't understand why we have to commentate on it, but as a commentator, I don't think the standards are equal for all. And it doesn't make it any easier for a male or female to commentate on my body or on my competitors. It doesn't make it easier, and it's not right. I'm not saying they should do that. But at the same time, if we really listen to the dialect and the, you know, the comments made on different sports, it's always been there. But is it right? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. No, this is a complicated
topic. I've never done it.
Yeah. It's a complicated topic. And I think one thing you highlight too is it's like, we can't ignore bodies. Bodies have shape, you know, bodies have muscle, bodies have length. So we're not trying to ignore bodies. And like you said too, like, I think it's cool that bodies come in all different shapes and sizes. I think that's unique. And I think that's what makes us unique and special. So it's hard to, you don't want to ignore it or say nothing, but it is interesting how in certain sports, sometimes comments come out and it's like, why does this matter? If they're running, they're on, you know, they're on the same playing field, stage, track, whatever, they're doing the exact same thing. You look at their times, look at their history, like clear, it doesn't matter. But it is also interesting how in some sports we do talk, like you said, football, we do talk about size and weight. And it's like this, it's ingrained in that culture in a positive way. Although coming from working in collegiate sports, I also know there's some negative habits there too of weighing the football players every single day. And, you know, it has its challenges, but it's just something I wanted to bring up because I think you have a unique perspective on it. And both being the athlete and being somebody who's at these sporting events, and it has always been there. Nothing is worse than it ever has been before. It's probably continuing to get better. So it's just something to continue to challenge ourselves on that. Hey, we can recognize bodies are different. We see that bodies are different and just appreciate their differences instead of trying to label one as superior or one as better or whatever it might be.
That's exactly what I think it is. I think commentators need to understand that not every athlete can handle that and not every athlete needs to handle that. Being, I think, what is the tough part with athletes and having commentators say something or analysts say something about their bodies is it's normally not in the nicest way. Usually it's like they're, you know, comparing them to some cartoon or some sort of analogy. And it's like, what does that have anything to do with the race? You know what I mean? Like that's where I get ticked off about it. You know, I don't think it's fair. Or if you know an athlete has had a struggle with it, I don't even know if it needs to be out there. You know, like if an athlete has a struggle with it and they've been open enough to talk about it on a podcast or in a newspaper article or something, well, maybe we can refer back to the publications or things that they've openly talked about. But it's just a really hard thing, Lindsay. Like, I don't know, Molly Seidel, for instance, if you know her, she's a really good runner. made the Olympic team in her very first marathon she ran. She made the Olympic team. And she now has since come out and talked about her struggles with eating. And, you know, it scares me a little bit for when I do commentary now with her, especially when it's going to be a 2+ hour race and people are going to bring up her story and her journey and they're going to talk about that. And I know as a sort of a friend or colleague of Molly, she wouldn't mind me talking about some of the things that she's put out there. But when you don't know somebody personally, I just don't know how to even explain the thought process that goes into how to be an analyst when you are talking about someone that struggled. So it's a tough line. And I think commentators have to tread lightly. And for me, I just avoid it. You know what? I don't think that makes someone or breaks someone. I think it just, that's part of their story and let them tell it.
I like that. I like that approach. That's their story. Let them tell it. I'll focus on the race and what I'm supposed to be commentating
on
here.
Let's talk about their splits. Let's talk about their journey. Yeah, exactly. You know, injuries obviously come into play. Their history comes into play. But, you know, you can't change your body. You're given this one body. You know, yes, we can fuel differently. We can train differently. Our bodies might look different. But you can't change how tall you are. You can't change how short you are. So I just think that's something I'm going to leave alone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I know I'm asking you challenging questions, but you're answering them amazingly. I love having this conversation with you. So I appreciate you. These are tricky things to talk about, talking about weight, talking about commenting on people's body size. These are tricky things. So I really appreciate you.
They are. And I love a lot of my friends that I've done commentary with, but there are times when it's hard. Change the subject. Let's move on because I know this is going down the wrong road. Or if I can hear them and I've heard, you know, I mean, I just think of a few athletes that have just been kind of attacked and I just feel for them. And I hope that they don't think that all of us are looking at them at that, you know, in that way, or I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's tough. I just look at the person and hope they're having a kick butt race that I get to tell everybody about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So I'd love to just quickly tell our listeners some things that you are engaging in now. So in addition to commentating, you host some running camps or youth camps in Minnesota?
I do. Yeah. So we have a youth camp every year, although we didn't have it in 2020. And I'm not sure if we're going to be allowed to have it in 2021, but it's an overnight camp for 7th through 12th grade girls and boys. And it is so much fun. You know, we learn all the ins and outs of the sport, cross country, track. Basically, they're all distance runners that come. And yeah, we have a blast. But I'm also a coach I coach high school. I coach some, you know, learn to 5K runners. I also coach, you know, people that are trying to be elite at their age group, all kinds of different athletes. And, you know, I do a lot of broadcasting like we talked about. I'm also a podcast host. I have a podcast called See Tolly Run. I work for Rock and Roll Marathon. I do a bunch of things. And it's just been a joy to stay in the sport, but yet not have to run fast anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't mention your podcast yet.
Yeah.
See Tolly Run. It's great. You put out an episode every week. So I've been listening to that on some of my runs. I think that's my favorite time to podcast is let's do it on my run. And you bring so much energy to your show too. So it's a really great one. If you don't already listen to it, you can go check that one out. And you interview a lot of athletes and runners, and it's a really good one. So I also wanted to tell our listeners where they can find you, especially, you know, for any youth listeners and who are local to Minnesota and maybe interested in doing one of your camps, if and when they come out again after COVID, or somebody who might be looking for run coaching, how could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, they can find me on any social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff, although I'm not very good at Twitter. But you can find me both at Kerry Tollefson or at See Tolly Run. And also, if you email me through info@KerryTollefson, that KerryTollefson.com is our website for the camp, that comes right to me. I'm like, I'm the camp director. I answer all kinds of questions through info@KerryTollefson. So whether you're a high schooler and you want to come to camp, or you're some 65-year-old that wants to just go and run again, come to info@KerryTollefson.com and you'll get right to me. Or at See Tolly Run. You can email us and contact us there too. So we're all over the place. You can find us anywhere.
Yeah. So good. So awesome. Thank you for sharing. So to wrap up this podcast, I do have a few just really fun questions if you're down to play.
Ooh, I'm down.
Okay. Carrie, if there was one food that you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would that be?
Well, I eat a chocolate ice cream or a chocolate milkshake every single night. No joke.
And that's been going on for a while.
Oh, it's been going on since high school, or I don't even know, maybe elementary. It's my dad. Dad and I have done that. But, you know, I would have to say probably something Mexican. Like, I love fajitas. I love enchiladas. I love it all. So probably chicken fajitas would be my fave.
Yeah. Amazing. And I love hearing that you have a chocolate milkshake every single night. It sounds
every single night. It's not huge. It's maybe like, I don't know, 6 or 8 ounces, but oh, I look forward to it every night. And I don't even drink alcohol. So maybe that's my vice.
Maybe
chocolate milkshakes, which I've had plenty of times where I've come home from the, you know, dancing, which I haven't done in years, but where I've driven a bunch of people home that have had a few at, you know, the club or whatever, and we'll go through a drive-through and get me my chocolate shake on the drive home. So
everybody else had their drinks. It's time for me to have my shake. Yep.
I'm the DD, but I'm definitely going and getting a chocolate shake. So deal with it.
I love that. Carrie, what is your favorite sport to participate in? Is it the obvious track and field or something else?
Well, I would have to say probably cross country was my favorite for running, but I loved playing basketball. Ooh. I played all throughout my high school career and then I had to give it up. But my center went and played pro. She was not in the WNBA. It was before the WNBA came out, but she played pro in Rome. And we had just such fun camaraderie and just excitement on the court. And so I love that. I'm not going back to the court because I want to, my knees have got to be good for the run because that's my sanity. But now that I have all these kids, we're getting out there shooting around and having some fun.
That's awesome. What about spectator sport? Is that different?
Ooh. Well, I love watching basketball. I mean, for sure, that's my fave to watch, especially the Villanova Wildcats. Put your V's up.
Not for you.
Yeah. But now, I mean, I like everything. I mean, it's so funny, like having these kids now and not having my energy into a sport, like I am the loudest mom in the gym or on the sidelines.
I love it.
And I get so focused. Like it's so, I can tell, like I'm out there thinking, stop it. But when the coaches tell the athletes to do something, I'm like, you got to do what the head coach just said. Like, come on, Ruby. Come on, Ev. Come on, Greer. I'm just nuts.
I love it. That's why I love asking that question though. Cause it's one thing to be an athlete yourself, but like as a spectator, as a fan, it's like a totally different experience. And I'm sure as a parent watching your children, totally different too. So it's thrilling.
And I just love having coaches tell me what to do in life. So seriously, like I can read their lips and I'm like, oh, they just said, you got to go low or you got to do this or whatever. And I'm like, okay, let's go low. I'm such a nerd.
I love it. Oh man. All right. Final question, Carrie. If there is a female athlete out there that really inspires you or you just want to give a shout out to, who would that be and why?
Oh my goodness. There's so many good athletes out there, but I'd have to say some of my favorites are from the world of track and field and cross country. And, you know, Allison Felix has been a role model of mine, even though she's like 8 years younger than me, but she and I spent a lot of time together as Adidas athletes when she was at Adidas. And you know, I just have seen this graceful woman grow up in the sport. She was so good as a teenager. And then she came into the professional world very young, still as a teenager. And, you know, to see her fight for things in a way that isn't very loud, you know, her voice is heard, but she's there behind the scenes. She's there in front of the camera when she needs to be. She's a mom now. She's still trying to get out there and get after it, but she's also giving back and she's doing things, you know, she's doing things with the US government, you know, like just things that we wouldn't really hear about, but she's fighting for us female athletes. And so Allison Felix has been a big role model and, you know, fun to say, I know her type thing. But then people in my sport have, you know, Jen Rines, she's a Villanova athlete, but a 3-time Olympian, just has been amazing in her career, her longevity, Dina Castor, Amy Rudolph, Paula Radcliffe, all those, Shalane Flanagan, Kara Goucher. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I've forgotten some, but we've got some good peeps in our sport and you know, not only good runners, but phenomenal women as well.
Yeah. And you as well, Carrie, thank you so much for being what I like to call a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. And we really appreciate you coming on the show. And we'll include all your links in the show notes for people if they want to follow along with you or get in touch with you. And just again, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode and thanks for listening. But before I let you go, I have free resources that you can have access to right away, right now, so that you can start fueling your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. First, I have your Red S recovery race. If you've ever wondered if you might be struggling with Red S, curious to learn more, or know you have Red S and are looking to recover fast, then you can head to www.riseupnutritionrun.com/redS and download the Red S recovery race. See how you place and figure out the next steps to recovery. Plus, while there, I have a few other great resources for you, including 3 nutrition secrets that every elite athlete swears by and access to our private Facebook community, Female Athlete Nutrition. So again, to gain access to all of this, head to riseupnutritionrun.com/redS. That's /REDS. And you can gain access and get the help you need fast. Too many girls and women and female athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. Become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and I'll see you next time.